Welcome to another Innovation Forum podcast with me, Toby Webb, and I'm delighted that joining me in today's podcast is Dr. Peter Stanbury-Davis. So welcome to the podcast, Peter. How are you today?
Very well indeed, thank you, Toby. Very well indeed. As ever, a pleasure to see you.
Well, we've worked together for a long time in our careers over different areas of corporate responsibility and sustainability. A bit of government policy work we did back for David Cameron many years ago.
Remember him? He used to be Prime Minister.
He did. Now has a somewhat different reputation.
Indeed.
And you have specialised in the last decade or so in political economy analysis. You did an excellent book on the role of business in post-conflict reconstruction and fragile states. So before we talk about how political economy analysis is relevant to agriculture and landscapes, just give us a brief overview of your career in this space, of the kind of work you've been doing that then we can then make relevant to this conversation.
The point to start is, although political economy analysis sounds rather sort of academic and rarefied, in actual fact, the aim is to be ruthlessly practical. What one is trying to do is to really understand, how does the place work? How does power work? Where does power sit? Who has it? Who doesn't have it? How does that then impact on how you go about getting things done in some of these places? For example, if you look at somewhere like Nigeria, I did some work in the north of Nigeria looking at the rise of Boko Haram and trying to understand why it was that they got traction, particularly amongst young people. And some of the answers you come up with are not necessarily very palatable. Young men have very few other economic opportunities, and therefore someone coming along and saying, come and fight for Allah, starts to seem really like quite a clever thing to do. So it's a question of getting to the bottom of why do things happen, even if we don't like it, in order that we can then get things done. And I think you can pitch that around three different things. The first of all is incentives. You know, why do people as individuals do what they do? Often you find a situation where people do things that seem to us to be odd. But for them, those things make perfect sense. And you've got to try and understand what those motivations are, even if you don't necessarily approve of those motivations. So again, to use an example, in Nigeria, we were doing some work on tax reform. You have a situation where tax collectors, because by and large the process is in cash, will take out 15% or so in the middle. Gosh, that's corruption, I hear you shout. But when you actually start to talk to these guys, they don't get paid a very great deal. Because of a wider problem in corruption in the country, issues like healthcare, education are extremely expensive. So actually, from these guys' perspective, this isn't corruption. This is merely how they keep their children fed, educated. You start to say, well, OK, we don't like that as a motivation, as an incentive. But if we say, right, you are now going to use an electronic system, and if you're able to increase the amount of tax revenue you bring in, you'll get paid a bonus. Suddenly these guys are, oh, I get what I have before, but actually now it's legitimate. So then they can use it to get loans and so on. So it's trying to genuinely understand what people want to achieve and how do you deliver that without too much negative outcome.
So a lot of that is obviously fascinating and sounds like some classic development economy work. How is that relevant, do you think, to the issues you and I have been discussing recently? Indeed, you've written a piece on it, looking at examples from Brazil to Indonesia, as to how these sorts of learnings, which classically sit in the development sphere, are now highly relevant to business. So tell us a bit about the piece you've written, which I'll be publishing shortly on my blog on sustainablesmartbusiness.com.
I think it's about trying to understand the totality of the problem that you're facing. Rather than a panic reaction to what you think might be the challenge, political economy helps you understand what really is the nature of the problem that you're looking at, and to try and understand some of the elements of a problem that make it tick. So if one looks at some of the issues that companies are facing at the moment, for example, in Brazil, there's a BuzzFeed article, for example, about 3 weeks ago that went into a town in the Amazonas province. This piece said that the average wage there is about $18 a day. But if workers were prepared to help clear prime forest, then they get about $60 a day. Now, again, that money is money which individuals are using for health and education of their children. And so saying they shouldn't do it isn't going to get you very far. What you've got to try and do is say, well, that, whether we like it or not, is a perfectly legitimate motivation. What does that then mean we need to do, if you're a company, to provide an answer to those people's motivation in a way which doesn't cause damage?
So companies are under a lot of pressure to engage in these sorts of issues now because they get blamed, rightly or wrongly, for when deforestation, land burning happens. And we know that's incredibly complex. But if there's a company executive listening who understands what you're saying, they're sort of trying to do that kind of thing. They're trying to find sustainable livelihoods. They're trying to find partnerships. What extra can I have political economy analysis add to the mix? Or does it risk just confusing things for a big company that's already in trouble on the ground in terms of resource and so on?
No, I think that's a very valid point, because you can analyse these things to the nth degree. But political economy analysis always works best when you've got a clear question. You know, another thing I cover in my article is something like IPOP, the Indonesian...
Let's just explain what that is.
Indonesian palm oil pledge, which was a very solid attempt by a number of companies to address the issue of damage caused by palm oil plantations in Indonesia. And at one level, the thing looked like it was an extremely good idea. Another thing you need to look at within political economy is institutions and how do institutions work. Because often, particularly in developing economies, the sorts of institutions that we expect to be in place in our countries, like, for example, land registries, just aren't there. In many of these countries, the institutions, formal institutions of government and governance, aren't really where power actually lies. And I think in the case of IPOP, one of the reasons that it fell apart in 2016 was because there were attacks on the IPOP process that they undermined smallholder farmers, but yet smallholder groups claimed that this was not the case. So obviously there's something going on there in the terms of how these organisations, these business membership organisations are working, which is not the way in which they present themselves as being. And it's a question of digging under the surface and understanding how those things work and then being able to say, well, so how do we get this to work? Again, I think another thing that went wrong with IPOP was potentially a misunderstanding of what the various government authorities were involved in the process for. I don't know, but maybe what they were looking for was to be able to appear to be big and in charge and addressing an important issue, but yet the launch was held in New York. The IPOP process offered to help the government with its regulation. You can see that being a very potentially antagonistic approach. But it's really what you have to do with political economy analysis to say, what is it you want to try and find out? What is it you're trying to do as a business? Are you trying to invest in country X? Are you trying to successfully develop plantations for palm oil or whatever it might be, in a way which is going to be insured against too much criticism or legitimate criticism from outside sources? And then you really need to dig down into the process of what does that get you into and what do you need to do about it?
So is the idea, I suppose, to help stop these unintended consequences from taking place? We hear about that all the time in corporate sustainability. You try and solve one problem and in doing so you solve another. And in fact, if we sort of thought it through a bit better, we may have avoided that in the first place. And I suppose a political economy analysis helps you avoid the pitfalls that may come later by giving you a sort of deeper analysis on power structures and incentives and institutions so that you can perhaps try and avoid some of the pitfalls that we're seeing today.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, the way I would describe it is you're trying to get a sort of null hypothesis on how a place works. Why do people do what they do? How do institutions work? You know, where might be some malleability to get change to happen, perhaps because of press coverage or the election coming up, whatever it might be. You're trying to understand, therefore, if you do X, what do you think might be the impact of that, both positive and negative, and to make sure that you're able to do things which are going to be more the former and less the latter. It sometimes means being innovative in how you go about doing things. I mean, again, to come back to good old Nigeria, I was doing some work with an agricultural firm that was looking to set up a rice plantation in the very north of the country. And they tried the usual process of going through the core government ministries and hadn't got anywhere, largely because of objections from local people. So we developed a mapping process which mapped the local villages and how those villages might expand over the period of time that the plantation was going to be running, and then designed the plantation so that they got their 35,000 hectares or whatever it was that they wanted, but in a larger space in a way that didn't disrupt local people. So it's a question of understanding, as you said, Toby, it's the potential unintended consequences of what you're going to do so you can be better able to design how you move forward, but also to keep their analysis going so that as change starts to move forward, you can always respond to that.
So I think what's interesting about your work and experience, Peter, and the reason I suggested we do this podcast is because you've spent 10 or 15 years or more now, or longer, I think, mired in these issues in development related to agriculture, related to poverty, whereas a lot of political risk and analysts I come across are quite high level and focus on, you know, who might win the election or, you know, what rules are on the statute book. And I think your expertise is quite helpful in helping companies understand the kind of on the ground issues of political economy that might affect these quite large investments we now start to see in these issues. So thank you for your time. Listeners, Peter's written an op-ed for my blog on sustainablesmartbusiness.com. And Peter, if listeners want to find out a bit more about your work, where would they go?
My website is thefrontierpractice.com.
Okay, great. Peter Stanbury-Davis, thank you very much for your time today.
Toby, as ever, great talking to you.